This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
What's one secret that you will take to the grave, but can tell internet strangers? Story 1. My grandfather's youngest brother was murdered in the late 50s. The brother was a door-to-door salesman and called a man's wife, honey, during his pitch. The man overheard it and shot him. The local sheriff deemed it justified because he shouldn't have called another man's wife, honey. My grandfather and his other brother later killed that man. Both came home that night covered in blood and told my grandmother that when the sheriff comes around, to tell him they were home all night drinking and playing cards. My grandfather told me that story when I asked him why he drank so much. Story 2. My dad got into some severe health issues and almost didn't come home from the hospital. He and his brother never really talked, but his brother mentioned that he could come down and visit dad when he was home, recovering from his illness. It's important to note that dad lives in a tiny town about 30 miles away from his brother. The night that he was supposed to visit my dad, I saw him in the local diner, which is located a few blocks away from my dad's house. We didn't talk or wave. I just saw him as he was passing by on the way to the bathroom. I asked my dad if he had seen his brother that night, since his brother went 30 miles out of his way to go to the diner. So I figured that he had stopped by to see dad too. He never did. He flaked on my dad. His brother died 2 nights later of a heart attack. I can't tell my dad that I saw his brother and that his brother flaked on him while he was just down the road sitting at home. Story 3. My father died of leukemia, but before I knew the diagnosis, he had a massive bleed on his brain a second time, and I had to carry him down the stairs. I accidentally bumped his head off the doorframe, and from that moment until the last 3 days he was alive, he never talked once, as he lost the ability to speak and was gasping for air until he passed away. Ever since I bumped his head by accident, it feels like I'm responsible for making his death come faster, and the guilt is eating me inside. But now, if I think about it, if I had not bumped his head, would he still be alive and suffer more from his leukemia for more than 3 days? I'm still missing him as an understatement, but I feel like I let him down at the end of his life. No one else knows about this, and I'm 100% taking this to the grave with me. Story 4. I legitimately think one of my cousins was born, or is, pure evil, or at least suffers from some kind of undiagnosed sociopathy or something. I can't tell my family or anyone who knows him, because they'll look at me like I'm crazy, except his younger sister. You probably wouldn't see it yourselves. My cousin is a charming, good-looking, and at least on the surface, nice guy. Animals like him a lot, too. He comes from a fairly healthy home environment, and his siblings are good people. But I've known him since he was born. We grew up very close. There is something deeply wrong with him. One of my first memories of him is seeing him pinching his own baby sister and smiling when she cried, and him encouraging me to do the same. My granddad was a farmer who did some dog breeding, share training as a side hustle. When we were 6 years old, one of our grandfather's dogs had a bunch of puppies. He let all his grandkids play with the puppies for a day. My cousin wandered off with one of these puppies on his own. Later, I found him harming it. He claimed it attacked him and that he was defending himself. My grandfather reluctantly gave him the benefit of the doubt, although he wasn't allowed near my grandfather's dogs again. At school, he was a bully. Not the type to beat a kid up himself, but the type who would incite others to do so and look for ways to humiliate people. If this was a high school movie, he would be one of the bullies' gang that watches in the background, although he never really had any close friends to do that. One time he befriended this guy, got him to confess to some embarrassing stuff in private, then told everyone about it. Another time, he stole someone's belongings and planted them on someone else, trying to incite them to fight. He has weird relationships with women. I don't think he's physically abusive, but from what I've seen, it's all quite borderline or emotionally abusive. I also know for a fact he's cheated on pretty much every girlfriend he's had, and there was at least one girl in high school whose photos he might have leaked too. One of his on-and-off girlfriends has some mental health issues. I don't really know what her issues are exactly, but she's attempted to take her life a few times. One time she called him on the phone at a family gathering, threatening to do so. His reaction? He laughed and told her to go ahead. Only myself and his sister overheard that part. He told everyone she was just attention-seeking and not to worry, despite knowing she had attempted at least once before. There was this guy in college he had a big rivalry with. They were both vying for the same position on the soccer team. I think it started as some kind of prank thing, but it escalated. Eventually, the other dude lost his temper and beat my cousin up badly for no apparent reason, getting expelled in the process. I have since spoken to the other guy. He claims he did this because my cousin spiked him on a night out and implied he did something while he was blacked out to provoke him. This guy never went to the police, though, so make of that what you will. If you ignore a lot of the superficial elements of his charm, he's actually not a particularly open individual. He lies constantly. Pretty much every conversation with him will have him probing to find out as much about you as possible while giving very little about himself away. Often, what little he does tell you about himself are lies or half-truths. He's been that way since we were both children, although he's far more polished now. I even remember asking him when we were both kids, "Why do you lie all the time?" And his response was, "Because it's fun." I don't think he ever really has or had true friends. He has people he's friendly with or socializes with, and he has people who are weirdly devoted or dependent on him. He discards both as and when he needs to, or just gets bored of them. There was this month where he sort of just disappeared. Stopped showing up to work, stopped messaging his mother, told none of his friends or girlfriends. I think a missing persons report might have been filed. He resurfaced eventually, claiming he had a new job overseas that he had been interviewing or traveling for. He must have had evidence to prove this because it was all dropped without hassle. That's just off the top of my head. There is other stuff, but I legitimately believe he's a monster. Story 5. My grandmother lived with us when I was growing up. When I got my driver's license, I had to share a car with her. One time I was trying to back out of a really tight spot and scrape the car next to me. I did a hit and run and never told anyone about it. When my parents saw the scrape on our car, they asked both of us about it, and I denied knowing anything. My grandmother also denied it, of course, but because she was old, 88 at the time, my parents assumed she did it and forgot. We later determined she was actually developing Alzheimer's. It caused a huge fight and led them to take her keys away and not let her drive anymore. I never told anyone and got sole use of the car for myself, with the stipulation that I needed to drive her to church every week or anywhere else she wanted to go. This happened about 25 years ago, and she passed a few years later. Story 6. When I was 18, I had an intimate experience with a 31-year-old while I was on the phone with her husband. He was in prison at the time. They were friends with my mom. I went to her house to drop off something my mom had bought for her. Her husband was asking me if I had seen his wife with other men or if I thought she would start dating while he was locked up. After about 5 minutes of this and her continuing what she was doing, I told him I had to go to work. He asked me to give the phone back to his wife. I didn't want her to stop until I was finished, so I told him she went to get her kid from school and wasn't there. The following week, she and I were together again. That experience remains one of the most memorable for me. Later, I also had a relationship with the separated wife of another guy. She was 28, and I was still 18. To this day, that is still one of the most intense experiences I've had. My wife today is really, really great, but nothing quite compares to that one. Story 7. In 7th grade, we had to do a school project in Spanish where we learned prepositions and had to do a little dance to illustrate them, like putting our hands to our left and saying left in Spanish. I did not want to do this project and did everything in my power to avoid it, even skipping class. I had extreme undiagnosed anxiety and other mental health issues. But it didn't work. My Spanish teacher forced me to do it and even brought out a camcorder to record me doing it. I was crying the whole time, doing the dance half-heartedly while wiping tears from my eyes. I asked her if we could stop multiple times and she said no. I hope she destroyed that video. I don't remember how the day ended. I think I blocked it all out. It's the most humiliated I've ever felt in my life. Middle school was the worst part of my life, and I have more stories I never want to relive. Story 8. Many, many moons ago, a small group of friends and I started a massive forest fire completely by accident while hiking and camping. Apparently, our campfire, properly guarded with rocks and spaced from trees, but ultimately in the wrong place, set fire to a root system that tunneled underneath the ground and ignited a fire that burned through thousands of acres of forest. We woke up to what was supposed to be a dead fire pit, completely extinguished the night before. But instead, it looked like a huge smoldering sinkhole of roots lit up with embers. The fire had spread down through a cliffside.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them. And guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
4th of July deals are on at Lowe's. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances, including the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator featuring Beverage Center and Dual Ice Maker. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Now's the perfect time to upgrade your home with top Samsung appliances and hot 4th of July savings at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
And onto a plain of dry grass and old trees. We tried to extinguish it, but no one had brought anything that could hold enough water from the nearby source to carry over and douse all the embers and flames. So we left for town. When we got back, the news was already reporting what had happened. No, I won't link it. Story 9. I'm very much struggling with my mental health, but I can't bring myself to actually follow through with anything drastic. I can't afford therapy either, and my only experience with inpatient treatment was extremely scary and deeply traumatic. I've pretty much given up on life. I actively dislike myself. I don't want to live in this world if this is the world I have to live in, but taking my own life is something I just keep putting off. I drift through each day, technically being on the path to doing something with my life, going through the motions of actually trying, all the while hoping something external happens to take me out. The biggest thing stopping me from doing anything is the fact that it would seriously hurt the people I love. I can't tell anyone about this because I care too much about the people in my life to burden them with this information when they're already dealing with their own problems. Story 10. I'm glad my grandmother, I'll call her Judy, passed away, especially that she did before my grandfather. My grandfather cheated on my actual grandmother with Judy. It led to their divorce, and he eventually married Judy. For the rest of her life, Judy made it her mission to drive a wedge between him and our family. She encouraged him not to speak to my aunt for 25 years. She constantly canceled holiday dinner plans with our family at the last minute. A week after she passed, he begged my mom to have my aunt come visit. They reconnected and had a great relationship until he died. My grandfather should have stood up against her. He wasn't perfect, but it was obvious he was doing it mostly because of her. His last days proved how much he loved his family and how sorry he was. I won't pretend to mourn Judy. The pain she caused our family was real and long-lasting. Story 11. My grandfather tried to take his own life after he found out that one of my uncles had abused my mother for many years when she was a child. My grandparents didn't believe her when she told them as a teenager after he had harmed one of her friends. It was only after I was born, my mother now in her 30s, that she finally told them the entire story. My grandpa then drove to my other uncle's house with a weapon and, while holding it to his own head, asked my uncle to convince him not to go through with it. He said he felt so guilty that he hadn't believed his only daughter, that he deserved to die. Fortunately, my other uncle managed to talk him down, but it hurt so much to think that I could have lost my grandfather, who was so incredibly kind and caring, when I was only a toddler. Story 12. When I was in high school, there was this one girl who was known for being extremely open about intimacy and would let any boy be with her if they wanted to. No questions asked. She just really enjoyed connection. She and I became very close friends. Everyone always assumed that I was involved with her too. I never was, never have, and probably never will be. What she liked about me and the reason we became friends is that I actually viewed her as a person rather than an object, so I never approached her that way. About 5 years after she graduated, I decided to look her up online and found a police report of a missing persons case. She has not been seen in a very long time. I have no idea if she's alive or not, or what happened to her. It wouldn't surprise me if her lifestyle made her vulnerable to someone dangerous and something happened. Nina, if you're reading this, I hope you're okay. You were a good person. Story 13. Former CPS social worker. I've had a few cases that have stuck with me. Here are some that I will never forget. I was called out about a dad who had access to weapons, and a child saw him threatening to harm himself while pointing the weapon at his head. When I met with each of the kids, it was clear they were terrified of him. The mom had sent messages to a friend about the incident. When I arrived at the home, this eerie, unnerving feeling came over me. I felt like every hair on my body was standing up. The family had cameras on the outside of the home every 2 to 3 feet. I'll never forget the way being there made me feel. As part of my job, I would conduct forensic interviews with children, and there was a standard set of questions we would ask. A teen was living with his grandmother and the grandmother's boyfriend after he had been discovered engaging in inappropriate behavior with a younger child. The report was filed because the grandmother's boyfriend was on the registry. During the interview, the teen talked about going to court for what he did and how worried he was. He was in treatment and had recently disclosed that he himself had been abused when he was young. He had no idea that what he did wasn't normal and felt immense guilt. I remember feeling compelled to ask him about any thoughts of harming himself. He gave me a big smile and said, "Not at all." I was on vacation a few weeks later and got a call on my last day off that he had taken his own life. Basically, the judge didn't charge him with any crimes due to how well he had done in treatment and the remorse he showed. When they got back from court, He used his late grandfather's firearm. He was my first child loss while working in child welfare. I cried for nearly a week anytime I thought about the case. I received a report from another state saying that a mom and her two kids had been abandoned at a gas station, and the mom called law enforcement. The dad eventually picked them up 12 to 13 hours later. The police had put the mom and kids up at a hotel in the meantime. During my interview with the kids, they told me the dad was violent at home. The younger child started crying and said they used to have a dog, but he was gone now. I asked what happened, and the child said the dad threw the dog out of the car window on the interstate because the kids were arguing. It was absolutely horrendous and traumatizing for the kids. The man was not the biological father of either child, thankfully. He tried to claim paternity of the youngest and, in court, refused to take a paternity test. When the judge said he was in contempt, he yelled, "Why do I have to take a paternity test? Why don't you make her," pointing at the mom, "take a maternity test?" Needless to say, the courtroom struggled not to laugh, including the judge. Story 14. When I was in high school, I was in love with this girl. I met her family. Her dad sat me down at the kitchen table and told me I couldn't date his daughter anymore, as I wasn't going to amount to a hill of beans. I left, hat in hand. She got pregnant by another guy before high school was out, got married and divorced with two kids, and is now living with her parents. After I got my master's degree in a good field, I wrote a short note to her father, enclosing a copy of both my bachelor's and master's degrees in majors that are actually in demand. I reminded him of the time he sat me down and told me what he did. I added, "How do you like me now?" I put it in an envelope, confirmed his address, stamped it, and didn't send it. I told myself I'd only mail it if I ever heard that Toby Keith song as a sign. I heard it, so I mailed the letter while on a business trip out of town. No return address. I don't live in the same city I grew up in, nor where I mailed it from. My name is common enough that it would be hard to track me down. I know it was immature, but my God, did that feel good? Like a weight off my shoulders. Story 15. I cannot express my gratitude for this post, because I can't be the only person who knows about something like this. I cannot believe I'm about to type this out. My ex, who was abusive, once told me that in his youth he had done something deeply disturbing to an animal. This was as I was starting to pull away from him because he was a terrifying and volatile alcoholic. Here's the unbelievable part. He said he told me this because he wanted me to feel sorry enough to stay and fix him. He would constantly threaten to take his own life if I left him. He truly believed that his behavior and substance issues were beyond his control and that none of it was his fault. Therapy hasn't even begun to touch these layers yet. I have never felt such instant fear from someone I thought I could trust. We were still in the process of separating, but I genuinely thought he might harm me right then and there. I somehow made it out of the relationship alive. He also intentionally ran over a raccoon during an argument just to make me cry. And every Valentine's Day for the past 10 years, he would text me until this year. This was the first year I didn't hear from him, and thank goodness. They say your cells regenerate every 7 years. Every single cell in my body has died and been reborn since the last time he touched me. Never again. I wish him the harshest judgment in the next life, if that's where he is. Story 16. I work for my mom and aunt at our family business, and I absolutely despise my aunt. I can't even look at her sometimes because her mere presence enrages me. She treats me horribly, so passive-aggressive and constantly cutting me down in front of the team. I wish I could telepathically share the face she makes when she's pretending to smile while her eyes look dead and hostile. It's one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. Truly an unpleasant person. What's worse is that she treats some of my coworkers terribly too. I once tried to stand up to her in defense of a colleague, and she unleashed on me for 45 minutes. I ended up excusing myself to hysterically cry in the washroom, and my mom had to drive me home. It was so embarrassing, especially since I'm in my mid-30s. I love my job. I'm great at what I do. I adore my mom, and I'm proud of what she and my aunt built, and that I'm part of it. So I don't want to quit. But I still wish huge amounts of ill will toward this miserable woman. It must take serious effort on her part to be so angry and negative all the time. Sometimes I think that if she were to pass away, I wouldn't even care. In fact, I sometimes believe the only way out of working with her is if that happens, usually after every interaction. I've never said this out loud to anyone before for obvious reasons, but it feels nice to vent to strangers.
Story 17. I was about 12 when my dad gave me a pellet gun. Not your typical BB gun, but one you could pump up multiple times to strengthen the shot. I had gone through the state hunter safety course and regularly went hunting with real firearms. I knew all about gun safety and never shot anything I wasn't trying to hunt for food. That applied to firearms, though. I respected those. I didn't treat the pellet gun the same way. We lived in a rural area where every family had their own 10-acre plot, gravel road territory. There was this orange cat everyone in the area knew and liked. He'd go house to house, never staying long but always welcome. One of the older couples even took him to the vet sometimes. He was beloved. My dad had built a treehouse in the back of our property. There was a small bridge over a dry wash that led up to it. One day, while I was goofing off in the treehouse with my pellet gun, I saw the cat crossing the bridge. I took aim, not to hit him, but to scare him, and fired about half a foot in front of him. The pellet ricocheted and hit him in the eye. He flipped and bolted like his tail was on fire. He disappeared for a while, so long that people started asking if anyone had seen him. When he finally came back, his eye was gone, and the socket was infected. I felt awful. I never meant to hurt him, and I didn't know how to fix what I'd done. The older couple took him in and had him put down because he wouldn't stay in one place long enough for treatment to help. He declined quickly. I took that pellet gun and rammed pellets into the chamber until it was jammed and ruined. I still hunt and even joined the army, so it didn't scare me away from guns. But it did teach me a lesson about respecting all firearms, no matter how small. It also imprinted the reality that even a well-intentioned shot can go terribly wrong. Story 18. I don't feel things as strongly as other people, so I fake it for the sake of family and friends. I like them, and I prefer them to be happy, so I do what I can to make them happy. But I don't think I'd be all that affected if the relationships ended. I don't really miss people. I've more or less cut contact with most childhood friends and extended family and let several relationships fizzle out, and I don't really feel anything about it. My biggest regrets are all the time I spent on them. Currently, my closest people are my mother and fiancé, and I probably have the most feelings about them than anyone else, but it's still not as strong as what others seem to feel. I prefer having them in my life to not, and I'd go out of my way to make them happy, but losing them wouldn't be life-shattering to me. It's much easier to not have connections. Story 19. There was an older divorced guy, a casual friend of mine, who unexpectedly passed away while I was out of the country several years ago. I was unable to return to attend his funeral because I was living internationally. I've had several people in my life pass away, most of whom were close relatives, but for whatever reason, I've had the hardest time getting over Jeff's death. We weren't the closest of friends, but he was always a genuinely good person that life had treated unfairly. I've never really told anyone how much it affected me, primarily because I don't think anyone would understand why I feel this way about someone who wasn't family and whom I wasn't super close with. But I still visit his grave, text his old number whenever something reminds me of him. I do none of this for my relatives who have passed, for instance, and I'd say his passing has affected me more than anyone else's. It just hit hard, and it's always stayed with me. Story 20. I think my aunt may have been involved in the death of her stalker. Back in the 1960s, my aunt was in her 20s and had a guy who liked her, but wouldn't leave her alone. She mostly ignored him, but he escalated to touching her without consent and trying to harm her. He broke into her house twice, and the police never took her seriously. One night, she went to a bar, and the guy followed her. She believed he tried to drug her drink. She said she kept blacking out but was still aware enough between blackouts to feel like her mind was being controlled. She said she woke up super early the next morning with her hands and clothes covered in blood that wasn't hers. She went home, cleaned up, and never told anyone. A few days later, the news reported a man found deceased in his home who sounded exactly like her stalker. She never saw him again. I don't know if she was making it up, but she wasn't the type to lie or tell fake stories. She passed away a couple of months ago, so whatever happened, she took it to her grave. Story 21. Only my therapist and my significant other know this, and now the internet. But my plan up until a few months ago was to make it to 18, move out, complete everything I felt responsible for, and then end my life. Unless an easier opportunity came earlier, I was just waiting for my moment. I was deeply hopeless and didn't want to be hospitalized again for the eighth time. I just wanted to get it over with. For some background, I suffer from CPTSD after being abused by a 30-year-old family friend when I was 13 to 14. Afterward, I spent 6 months in and out of inpatient care. I thought my life couldn't continue without that person because he was the only man to ever show me affection. It's been 1 year, 11 months, and 18 days since he was caught, and I'm grateful I've broken free of the mental hold he had on me. I turned 16 in January. I'll be 1 year clean of self-harm in April. I have a boyfriend who loves me, and I'm slowly rebuilding my life. Justice is still ahead when he gets out of prison in about 15 years, but I'm finally healing. Story 22. When I was in 7th grade, I was riding bikes with the neighborhood kids one weekend. There were two girls there, one of whom I had a crush on. My stomach had been hurting all day, and since we were close to my house, I said I had to drop something off for my mom. As soon as I turned down the street away from them, I suddenly and uncontrollably had an accident. To this day, I have never lost control of my body like that. I ended up jumping into a ditch and called my mom to pick me up before anyone saw. When she got me, it was so bad I had to stand outside her car while she drove me home. Thankfully, it was in our neighborhood, so it was relatively safe. When we got home, she sprayed me off with the hose in the side yard because I was covered in it. As this was happening, my friends and the two girls showed up at my house to check on me. They were laughing and disgusted as my mom sprayed me clean. She and I told them I had fallen off my bike in a sewer runoff on my way home. I'm still friends with this group today, and they still laugh about the time I fell in a sewer. I've never told them the truth, that it was so bad, my mom had to hose me off in the yard. Story 23. My father is a dangerous, two-faced man who presents himself as a devoted family man, university professor, and director of a nonprofit charity. But that is all a lie. The truth is, he's a narcissistic, emotionally, physically, and financially abusive person who used my mom and me as targets throughout my childhood. He has continuously cheated on my mom for as long as I can remember, but she has become a complacent enabler who doesn't love herself enough to want better or leave after enduring 3 decades of abuse. To make matters worse, he brought his child from an affair overseas when I was in high school. I found out the true extent of his depravity when that individual attempted to assault me while walking me back to where I lived at the time. Fortunately, I was able to push him away and run home. When I told my parents what had happened, I was met with criticism and blame, all because we had been drinking that night, which was frowned upon in our strict cultural background. Since then, I've battled severe depression and suicidal thoughts. Fortunately, I'm in a better place now with a good job, and I live far enough away from my father's controlling, abusive reach. That person is now struggling with addiction and being held in a detention center, awaiting deportation. It's a small sense of justice in a story that has taken so much from me. Story 24. My husband's best friend, and I mean they've been close since birth, has hit on me twice. The first time was when we were dating. He told me, "If it doesn't work out, let me know. Your wife material." The second time was at our college graduation party. By that point, my husband and I had been married for 4 years. His friend offered to drive me home from the BBQ because my husband wanted to stay behind and help clean up. On the drive, his friend told me he still had feelings for me, stronger than before, and asked if I ever felt the same. I told him no, and that I never would. He begged me not to tell my husband, and I agreed. I haven't spoken to him since. It's been 10 years. It would destroy my husband, so I haven't told him. I just avoid his friend entirely. It's hard, but I don't know what else to do. If I ever do see him, I can still feel how strongly he feels about me, and it tears me apart. I am deeply in love with my husband and always will be. I don't want to hurt him. Story 25. My brother was an up-and-coming conservative politician for a while. The thing is, he doesn't actually believe any of what he was saying or supporting. He's an atheist, but plays the religious card for public approval. He's manipulative and thrives on deception. He's the kind of person everyone trusts on the surface. But behind closed doors, he once leaned in and told me he poisoned the neighborhood dogs because their barking annoyed him. Everyone in his social circle adores him, but he always told me the truth because, in his words, no one will believe you anyway. He's completely indifferent to life and has been involved in a long-term affair with his sister-in-law. I once tried to expose him to our mom, and she ended up disowning me, saying, "How could you lie about him like that?" That dynamic drove me to the edge for years. I'm not great at storytelling, but he's a dangerous person. He's been accused of serious things. He denies them. But I believe they were true. I even suspect he may have hurt someone fatally. But if I say it out loud, I just sound like a lunatic. Story 26. My mom became more and more unstable starting around the time I entered high school, due to a combination of substance abuse and untreated mental health issues. By the time I reached my final year, I was so emotionally exhausted that I gave up on her entirely. After she disappeared for a few months, she called me one night. I told her outright that I didn't care whether she lived or died, and hung up. A couple of weeks later, she ended her own life. I haven't felt a shred of sadness, guilt, or grief since it happened, and it's been several years. That's the part I never tell people. Everyone wants to reassure you that it's not your fault when someone you love dies, but they don't know what to say when you agree. The truth is, I had to emotionally move on long before she passed, for my own survival. It was her decision in the end, and I had already let go. Story 27. My mom once told me about one of her friends who had been adopted. Apparently, her birth was the result of an incestuous relationship between a brother and sister. When the sister became pregnant, the baby, my mom's friend, was put up for adoption. Years later, my mom ran into the brother involved in that situation. He had been drinking and admitted it to her, asking her not to tell anyone. After retiring, my parents moved back to the same town. My dad told me a story from his younger years about when he first met my mom. That summer, he had been dating around town and once told me about getting drunk and fooling around with a woman. He said that due to being too intoxicated, things didn't really happen. Her family insisted he stay over since he couldn't drive back to his quarters. In the middle of the night, he got up to get some water. On the way back upstairs, his foot brushed against something. It was the condom they had tried to use. It must have fallen out of his trousers. He joked that if her father had found it, there probably would have been a forced marriage. Years later, I found out that the woman my dad had been with that night was actually my mom's adopted friend. That story made me realize just how nuanced and complicated my parents' early lives were. I used to think they were just boring, but they clearly had some pretty wild stories in their youth. Story 28. I told my dad it was okay to let go. He had a bad heart and had been struggling with memory issues. It turned out he was developing dementia due to restricted blood flow to his brain. He didn't tell anyone and eventually stopped taking his medications. As time went on, he became increasingly confused. The ER told us he'd suffered a major stroke and was having smaller strokes as well, and that there wasn't much more they could do. I brought him home to stay with my mom, who was in denial about how serious things had become. He could still move around physically, but mentally he was fading. I was the only child living nearby. The others were out of state, so I visited almost every day to help out. My mom was convinced he would recover, but I could see he was slowly slipping away. One day as I was leaving, I went to his room to say goodbye. He hadn't spoken in several days. I told him he needed to take his meds for mom's sake. He looked at me and simply said, "I can't." It was the first time he'd acknowledged me in days. I told him that if he was ready, it was okay, that we would understand. I promised I'd take care of mom. He smiled and pulled the blanket up over himself. He passed away the next day. If my mom ever found out what I said, it would probably cause an argument. But I believe he was exhausted, and maybe all he needed was permission. I don't think anyone else in the family could have given that to him. He was a great man, and I miss him every day. It wasn't illegal or scandalous, but it's a story I'll carry with me forever. Story 29. My best friend was diagnosed with glioblastoma almost 20 years ago. It's one of the most aggressive and fatal brain tumors, and there's currently no cure. At some point, he was moved into hospice care. His wife wasn't very supportive. She didn't bring any of his personal belongings to the hospice and instead argued with his parents about money. It was a very stressful time. I put my job on hold for several months to help sort everything out. Despite his illness, we still shared some good moments. Though his vocabulary was limited, one arm and one leg were paralyzed and one eye was blind, we could still communicate. We'd been friends for so long that simple words like no had many layers of meaning between us. He used to enjoy relaxing with weed, so one January I bundled him up in warm clothes, got him in his wheelchair, and helped him enjoy some outside time. I don't smoke at all myself. After one of those outings, I noticed his jacket had bunched up behind his back in the cold. He later became sick and developed pneumonia. From then on, he drifted into a state of semi-consciousness. His breathing was labored, and his lungs had to be cleared often. One night, while I was sitting with him, he grabbed my hand and brought it to his mouth as if trying to drink from it. At that point, he was no longer receiving life-sustaining treatment. A few days later, he was in visible discomfort, struggling as his lungs filled with fluid. There was a moment when I considered intervening just to end his suffering, but a nurse entered the room. 2 days later, I received the call that he had passed. His end was inevitable, but I've carried guilt ever since. I blame myself for small things, like my carelessness with the jacket. I couldn't save him, and that's something that still weighs heavily on me. Story 30. I'm not exactly sure if I'll take this to the grave, but I still don't know whether or not I should say anything. Basically, I found out that my dad might be bisexual or gay and may have cheated on my mom with men he met through Reddit. Long explanation ahead. During my birthday dinner over winter break, January of this year, we were talking about social media. I mentioned Reddit, and my dad said he had an account. He even told me his username. I assumed it would just be filled with typical dad stuff, like car and motorcycle content. I told one of my best friends his username and then drove home. My parents had taken separate cars. While driving, my friend texted me a screenshot and then called. They asked if I'd seen the image. I hadn't, since I was still driving. They went on to tell me that my dad had been active in some local and adult-oriented subreddits, including spaces for older men seeking younger men, as well as other explicit communities. While he didn't post, he frequently commented. Things like ASOL, wanna meet, and DM me, often complimenting explicit photos of men. Earlier comments included similar remarks on women's photos, but over time they shifted toward men. I don't know whether my dad actually met with anyone. That's why I don't know if I should tell my mom. Maybe they have an arrangement. Maybe he's hiding something. I also found out that my dad was active in subreddits about struggling marriages. I now know more about their private life than I ever wanted. Things like my mom being on medication, my dad worrying about divorce because she's his main connection to us and their mutual friends. He even wondered if she might be asexual or a lesbian. I told my partner, a few close friends, and my younger brother, who was at dinner and heard part of the conversation. He and I haven't talked about it since, and I haven't checked the account again. I always felt distant from my family, but this really hurt. I didn't expect it to affect me so much. For a few days, I drank pretty heavily. I've been trying to talk more with my parents since, but it all still feels weird. I still don't know if I'll ever tell my mom, or even if there's anything to tell. Emotional betrayal still counts, right? But would she see it that way? Story 31. When I was younger, one of our close friends was in a relationship with someone who was abusive. He would physically hurt her, and no matter how much we disliked him, she kept going back. She'd make excuses and defend him every time. Eventually, four of us had enough. We invited him to a remote location in the woods where we used to hang out and party. Once he got drunk, we took out the baseball bats we had hidden and beat him badly. We didn't end his life, but we made our message very clear. We gave him one day to leave town and warned him never to come back. He left. She didn't go with him. To my knowledge, she still doesn't know exactly what happened, though she probably has an idea. She never asked. The guy she ended up with later is actually a good person. I could never tell this story openly, not where I live, because we could still be charged even after more than 25 years. But every time someone tries to tell me that violence never solves anything, I remember this moment. I don't know about violence in general, but in this case, a baseball bat seemed to solve a lot. Story 32. As a kid, my parents never really let me go out. I rarely got to hang out with friends or visit anyone's house. I was basically a loner all the way through high school. For all 4 years, I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. They said they were too scared to let me drive, though they taught my sister in middle school. Being so repressed, I turned to online platforms like Omegle to talk to people. Somehow, even as a kid, I managed to carry conversations pretending to be someone else, usually a man. Sometimes those conversations got way too far, and we'd even make plans to meet. I spoke to people my age, and unknowingly to men pretending to be women too. I hate that it happened. I wish I had more self-control back then. Now I struggle with hypersexuality tied to those experiences and other issues like dysphoria. Voice, body, personality. It's frustrating. If I could, I'd love to fall somewhere on the Azure spectrum, but I'm still working on becoming the best version of myself and accepting who I am. The hypersuality is still present, but at least now, I don't hate my voice anymore. It also doesn't help that my three closest family members constantly mock me growing up to toughen me up. That definitely fueled my voice dysphoria. They used to repeat everything I said in a fake deep voice because mine was the deepest in the family. It started in middle school and left a mark. Feeling like an outcast in your own home truly messes with your sense of self. Story 33. My mom found notebooks that belonged to my ex. In them, he admitted to drugging me to take advantage of me, giving me and my roommate different substances than what we believed we were using. We thought it was cocaine, but he gave us something far more dangerous. Also, he could orchestrate a situation for his own gratification. He admitted to coercing other women, to never wanting to be a father to our son, even though he now fights for custody, cancels often, forgets scheduled visits, and leaves our son with his mother during his time. And to secretly adding substances to my drinks so he could inject me with even harder drugs while I was unconscious, his goal being to get me addicted. That last one was the most devastating, because for years I took full responsibility for my addiction. Finding that notebook changed the way I saw everything. I tried speaking to an attorney, but because I didn't remember much and technically said yes to some things, there was little that could be done, especially since he comes from money. Now I just carry this knowledge with me. It's painful, especially when he texts me about our son. I sit in co-parenting therapy sessions biting my tongue because realistically, speaking out about it doesn't help my son. It doesn't make him a better father. It doesn't help our situation. It's just something I know. Story 34. My aunt passed away from cervical cancer exactly 6 years ago. Today marks the anniversary of her death. While in hospice care, she was planning her funeral and trying to renew her vows with my uncle. She would talk to me about her plans, but I often brushed them off. I truly believed she was going to beat cancer. Looking back, I could tell it hurt her that I didn't fully listen or engage in those conversations. She never did get the chance to renew her vows. It was extremely difficult to be around her. Before she got sick, she was a bigger woman, standing at 5'7". By the time she passed, she weighed about 90 pounds. You could see her ribs and pelvis, and she had to wear a diaper because she lost control of her body. She couldn't walk anymore. A year earlier, she was full of life, and then suddenly, she was barely a shadow of the person I knew. We spent 2 weeks visiting her before she died, and I struggled to be present. I talked to her, but I wasn't really there. I was in denial that she was going to die. I regret how I acted during those 2 weeks. I wasn't mean, I just wasn't emotionally available. Sometimes I'd sit next to her and stare off into space, unable to face what was happening. At one point, I got upset with her because she told me she was going to stop treatment. I was so distraught, convinced that more treatment would save her. I didn't yell, but my reaction was visible. I didn't understand at the time that she had accepted her reality and was ready for peace. I was focused on how much I wanted her to stay. I try to remind myself that I was only 16 and I was losing my best friend. The person I called constantly before her diagnosis. Once she started talking about dying, I couldn't bring myself to call her every day anymore. I just couldn't face it. I was closer to her than to my own mom, and I still carry the weight of that goodbye. Story 35. Almost 20 years ago, out of the blue, a woman claiming to be related to a very distant uncle showed up at a family reunion. She had a lot in common with him, but she seemed a bit too attractive for me to fully believe her story. In fact, he openly said he'd rather not do a DNA test because he didn't want to ruin the fun of having a spare daughter. The reunion had a few interesting moments, but I kept finding myself hanging out with this new possible cousin because she didn't know anyone else. She was flirty, but I didn't read too much into it. Fast forward a couple of months, she had a one-day work presentation in my town and needed a hotel suggestion. I wasn't doing anything and offered to let her stay at my place to save money. She accepted quickly, and suddenly we were drinking Cointreau like teenagers and cuddling on the couch, laughing at bad movies. We had just a few hours before she had to get some rest for an early flight. We weren't each other's type. I wasn't really attracted to her, and we lived on opposite sides of the country. But something about her being technically off limits added this strange tension. As we were cuddling, She suddenly climbed into my lap and paused when she noticed my reaction. I was working up the nerve to apologize, but instead she removed her leggings and underwear, quickly unzipped me, and said, "Thank God." I was starting to worry I'd have to go to sleep without getting any before initiating everything. It was fast, intense, and only afterward did I realize we hadn't used any protection. She told me it was fine, and we eventually fell asleep. About 10 months later, I checked social media, which I rarely do, and saw she'd gotten engaged to a coworker. She had a one-month-old baby, and the baby's name was mine, with just two letters switched. Most of our family doesn't stay in contact with her or use social media, so I seem to be the only one who noticed. We haven't spoken privately since that visit. Maybe we were both ashamed, or maybe that night meant something else entirely to her. She's had two more kids since, and they all resemble each other, so I assume her fiancé is the father of all of them. Still, it's strange to wonder whether that secret night is something only she and I will ever know about, or whether she's the one carrying this secret to her grave. Story 36. When I was a kid, my parents burned down our house for the insurance money. I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back now, everything lines up. Suddenly, they started acting strangely. My dad had new gravel laid on the driveway, expanding it so it blocked part of the yard, shed, and his workshop. They moved all the family keepsakes into the shed the night before the fire, and even moved a litter of puppies to the porch near the front entrance. My dad stayed behind that day to survey the back of the property, while my mom took us on a spontaneous trip to Florida to buy lottery tickets. He parked the family van directly next to the house between the new rocks and the siding. Coincidentally, the van burned too. While we were away, my mom got a call saying a neighbor saw lightning strike the house and that it was now on fire. My dad called the fire department, which was staffed by our cousins and local volunteers. They showed up, lit cigarettes from the flames, and watched it burn. It even rained as our house burned to the ground, on purpose. In the end, they didn't receive a single dollar. Insurance never paid out. We ended up homeless, living in a tent in the backyard. I lost my childhood, my home, and even my supposed college fund. It's important to note they were deep in self-inflicted debt at the time of this disaster. Story 37. My mom cheated on my stepdad and made me babysit my sisters in a hotel while she did it. I was 14 at the time, and my sisters were 4 and 2. I was always the third parent by default, being the oldest. My stepdad had gone to our vacation home for a week to fix a burst pipe. My mom told me she was meeting my aunt and got us a hotel room for a few nights. I assumed we'd see my aunt later. She usually got us a hotel when we visited her, but no one ever showed. From 5 p.m. Friday night until 6 a.m. Sunday morning, I watched my sisters alone in a hotel room. My mom didn't come back until I called her several times Saturday evening, panicking because my two-year-old sister had run out of diapers. She was annoyed, picked us up, and took us home. When we got there, her bedroom and bathroom smelled like a man. I asked where my aunt was. She said, "Ma, she went home." A few months later, my mom and stepdad divorced, and she started dating the same man she had seen that weekend. A year later, I visited my aunt and asked her about that trip. She told me she wasn't even in the country at the time. She showed me the guy's social media from that weekend, and sure enough, there was my mom out with him. My aunt told me she called my mom and said, "Are you going to tell your husband, or should I?" They're still together today. I make no effort to know him, and I've distanced myself from my mom. Story 38. One of my buddies had a cousin who lived with them. He was a troubled guy who had gotten caught up in drugs. As a young high schooler, it always felt cool to be around him. He'd give us advice and we'd hang out and talk about life. He eventually started using more serious substances. It began with pills due to a serious knee injury, but later escalated to heroin. That's when he started acting very shady. We started noticing things were missing, and we knew it had to be him. He lived upstairs in a small bedroom. One day we went up there because we suspected he had taken something from us. We banged on his door and called his name, but there was no answer. As we were walking away, I casually joked to my friends, "Huh, what if he's dead in there?" A couple of days later, my buddy's grandmother found him unresponsive on his bed. He had overdosed days earlier. That's when it hit me. We had knocked on his door when he was already gone. It was chilling to realize that the moment I made that comment, he had likely already passed. Life can hit fast, whether you're ready or not. Story 39. I tried to harm my dad when I was 14 or 15 years old. He slapped my 80-year-old grandfather and called him names because my grandpa couldn't stand or defend himself due to age-related issues and chronic back pain. My grandfather was the one who raised me. He's always been my role model, the most respected person in my life. He was a successful businessman who worked hard to support the entire family. None of us had to work while he was alive. He was incredibly loving, though he struggled to express it toward the men in the family in the same way he did toward the women. He didn't often say, "I love you," to the men, but he told my grandma and me every day. He was honest, blunt, stood by his beliefs, and loved his family unconditionally. Even my dad, despite disagreeing with many of his life choices. My dad often felt like the black sheep. He believed he wasn't loved, but he never changed his behavior. I saw proof every day that my grandfather loved him. He would wake up at 5 a.m. to pray out loud alone in the living room. I'd sometimes wake up early just to listen to him. He prayed for my dad's health, happiness, and future. I told my dad this, hoping he'd see that love doesn't always come with the words, "I love you." He didn't care. He brushed it off. After my dad got out of prison, he became verbally abusive toward both of my grandparents. I would step in, even though my grandparents didn't want me to get involved. They feared he'd turn his aggression on me. He did sometimes, but I wasn't afraid he'd hit me, so I tried to shield them as best I could. Things were horrible during that time. My grandparents and I didn't want him living with us, but they didn't trust the system and felt they had no choice. One day, I heard him yelling at my grandpa. I rushed into the living room just as he slapped him across the face. I snapped. I shoved my dad backward toward the basement stairs. One more push, and he would have fallen down over 20 steps onto a concrete floor. I screamed at him as I shoved with everything I had. He caught himself on the doorframe. I tried again, but he didn't move. Eventually, I gave up. He walked away. My grandfather was shaken and began experiencing symptoms of a heart attack. He had to take nitroglycerin. I told him I was sorry. He said the same to me. We decided from that point on to try not to give my dad any more emotional reactions until we could figure out a solution. Sadly, we never found one before my grandfather passed away years later. I don't regret trying to stop my dad that day, but looking back, I'm glad I didn't succeed in doing something irreversible. Story 40. My ex called me for a ride a few months after we broke up. We were still friends, so I obliged. She insisted on walking home once I got there, even though she was way too hammered to make it, and I was completely sober. There was no winning the argument, so I gave in. I spent the entire walk basically holding her up. We were finally almost to her apartment when she stumbled forward and grabbed me as she went down. There was no stopping it. She pulled me down on top of her. All of my weight and hers slammed her head onto the cement in the middle of the road. I thought I had seriously injured her, but she just sprang up and said she was fine like nothing had happened. She also refused to go to the hospital because she had no insurance and insisted she was okay. And let it be known, she was a mean drunk. That was one of the reasons we broke up. I had become so accustomed to giving in. She refused to get help. And by that point, I had been sober for 3 years. I had tried everything to support her. Anyway, I stayed with her all night to make sure she was okay. I went home the next morning, and that was the last time we ever spoke. Fast forward to about a year later, I got a call from her sister saying she had just found out that my ex had died from an aneurysm. The medical examiner said it was probably from alcoholism, but they also noted that for the last year and a half, she had multiple seizures and suffered from frequent migraines but never got help. So now I carry the guilt that maybe I set off a series of events that led to her passing that night. I know the alcohol might have been the cause, but I can't stop thinking. If I had forced her to accept the ride, she wouldn't have hit her head. Maybe she would still be alive. It's been 4 years and I still think about her almost every day. And I've never really talked to anyone about it. Until now, I guess. Story 41. I'm not suicidal at all. I genuinely love life and have so much to live for. But I'm also not afraid of death. Not even a little. If anything, I'm really curious about it and have even found myself feeling envious of people who have already experienced it. I never go out of my way to put myself in danger. But when I do end up in risky situations, my natural reaction is, let's see where this goes. I kind of lean into the moment, always with the thought that maybe this is it. Maybe this is when I finally see what happens.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
36 years old, I know I still have plenty of life ahead of me, and I'd never try to end it early, but when it happens, it happens. That doesn't scare me. I've never told my family or close friends because I don't want them to think I'm suic or to worry about me. I truly don't see it as a problem. Strangely enough, I'm not religious at all. I'd call myself agnostic with a leaning toward believing in reincarnation. I had a wonderful friend who passed away 2 years ago at 92 from cancer. She wasn't afraid of death either, and during her illness, we had amazing conversations about what might come next. She said she wanted to explore the universe once she was free of her tired body. I really hope she's out there now, flying from star to star, seeing everything. And just to be clear, this curiosity only applies to me. I can't stand to see others get hurt and would never, ever consider inflicting harm on someone else. I'm not fascinated with death itself, just what the journey of my own death will be like. That's all. Story 42. My dad has been financially unstable for as long as I can remember. He has this tendency to earn a lot of money and then burn through it for one reason or another. He's been trapped in a constant cycle of debt. During my board exams, the debt got so bad that he threatened to family suic. He never followed through, but he tried to scare us like that two or three times. One time, he pulled that stunt on someone's birthday while the whole family was gathered. I'll never forget the fear that day. The issue isn't just that he was in debt and did that. What bothers me most is that now, by God's grace, we are all okay. And he claims it was all just drama to scare money out of people who owed him. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It clearly wasn't just drama. Beyond that, he lacks financial wisdom. He lives for external validation and sets these extremely high goals while ignoring the present reality. We don't even know how we'll afford next month. I'm not against dreaming big, but what's the point if you take no steps toward your goal? In all of this, my brother and I tried to settle down and work to contribute to the household, but my dad just shrugged it off, saying, "Children can help, it's no big deal." Then he turns around and compares us to other people's children with high-paying jobs. His spending habits are beyond reckless. Once he has money, it's gone in a flash. We go from having plenty to having nothing in a heartbeat. I've grown to resent him for this. And don't get me started on his misogyny. He believes a daughter can do everything. A son can't lift a spoon in the kitchen, but I'm expected to come home from work and cook for six people. In the background, I hear things like, "What's the big deal?" He also loves shifting blame. When things go wrong with debtors, he hides behind other family members. It's exhausting. Story 43. I was unfortunately involved with someone who was extremely abusive. He had lied about his past relationships, kept me in the dark about his five other baby mamas and 10 kids, warrants of arrest in multiple states for back child support, felonies, etc. No, I wasn't dating Nick Cannon. When I found out, his true colors showed, and I became the next woman to experience his abuse. I was scared for my life when I was with him. The only thing I was able to do at that time to get back at him were stupid, gross, petty, minor inconveniences. I'm not proud of what I did, but I felt like he deserved it after all the things he put me, his baby mamas, and his kids through. One of the things I did was scrub the toilet with his toothbrush when I cleaned the bathroom. It gave me great satisfaction every time he brushed his teeth, knowing what I had done. I figured that since he's a talker, I might as well make it literal, too. I got in touch with some of his exes and shared a lot of information about him with them, which eventually led to his arrest. Oh, and I also slowly started throwing out his underwear and some socks, so for a while, he always had mismatched socks. We lived in a big house with his family, so I was able to get away with a few things without taking the blame. I also knew some of his passwords. At the time, he was big on World of Warcraft, so guess who got hacked? I moved in the shadows and was so relieved when I finally escaped that ridiculously chaotic relationship.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.